The federal Homeland Security agencies are a few steps ahead of most others when it comes to implementing identity management interoperability standards. Take the Justice Department. It sponsors identity management standards that lets all levels of government exchange law enforcement data. Donna Roy is the executive director of DHS's Information Sharing Environment Office and the program director for DHS's Homeland Security Information Network and the National Information Exchange Model.
There's a global federated identity privilege management GFIPM standard, which allows us to exchange information from state, local, tribal, or national private sector with the federal government. And it carries a set of standardized attributes so that I know when someone comes with a SAML assertion with GFIPM attributes that there's some fidelity if they come through identity provider that's been approved by NSTIC, that when they say they're a sworn law enforcement officer, I can trust that. And I can put them into the appropriate parts of our systems that can see law enforcement data. And so I think that some of the standards are there. I would say the adoption and the use of those standards, we have a long way to go.
Roy spoke recently at the AFCEA Bethesda, Maryland's chapter's breakfast on identity management. She says the goal is passing around trusted attributes so agencies can implement policy-based and risk-based access controls to data. It's the long-sought-after goal of attaching roles and responsibilities to each person that are updated in real time. This approach both ensures law enforcement officers have access to the right data at the right time and stops people from seeing or taking sensitive or classified information if they're not allowed to. Roy says DHS is already heading down this path for its employees and contractors.
We are also working in the department on implementing a really rigorous, what I call the information sharing and access policy framework. So a way to codify what I know about the identity of a person who needs to access DHS systems or other systems for which we steward. Everything I need to know about the data and how we need to protect the data. And then this other small piece called authorized purpose, which really codifies how we are charged to protect that data given the SORNs and the PIAs and the framework for that. And so I think that we are putting in place some advanced interoperability standards. The challenge is ensuring that the products the industry is providing supports the standards we're using, like ZACML and SAML and GFIPM and those types of things. And so it's only cost effective to implement these solutions if the standards are implemented in the technology solutions.
DHS is applying the initial pieces of this framework to the Homeland Security Information Network, or HISN. I caught up with Roy after her speech, and we talked more about HISN and the direction it's going with identity management.
The third version of it was recently updated, released, and part of that release included some identity management piece. Can you just give me a brief update in terms of what you guys did and what new capabilities you brought in?
The previous HISN was a level of two authorization, so it was pretty much a username password authentication into HISN, and that was no longer good enough for the types of information we were sharing. So we went to a two-factor authentication, and so as we migrated users from the old system to the new system, everyone went through an identity proofing process. About 90% of them were able to go through an automated identity process, and then we had a manual process set aside for those who weren't going to make it through for a variety of reasons, whether they didn't want to or there was a reason that they didn't have enough credit history or public record history to get through the automated process. And so we are strengthening the network of identity as we re-released HISN this year.
HISN is used by state, local, federal, but also some private sector entities as well, right?
That's correct. And we have international partners on. And so I like to say HISN is used by everyone but my Aunt May or the public citizens at this point. We are rolling out more public-facing parts of HISN in the FY14 timeframe, mostly to handle the bringing of the Coast Guard's home port missions into HISN. And so we'll have to even get to my Aunt May eventually on HISN.
And then she'll have to be identity-proofed, and boy, will you hear it at that point. Now, you've got a little bit of pushback from some of the organizations or some of the sectors in terms of doing the identity proofing. How'd you overcome that?
There was a lot of pushback on the identity proofing process because people didn't understand while we were using public record information, credit reports, or other types of information, we were using it through a broker. So the program never saw any of that information, and I think there was a lot of angst that maybe wasn't communicated as well. So we underestimated the effort to communicate exactly what was happening inside the service box that was outside of the HISN program's responsibility. We were just using a service and saying, tell us yes or no, did we pass the ID proofing process? And we get the yes back. And I think it wasn't until we went through a significant amount of communications and proving what we were doing with our third party in hand
that we were able to overcome some of those barriers. I think we're in a good place now, but we certainly were not in a good place as we were rolling it out.
How does the broker work? It's a third party who you're saying to them, the data is going to run through you and then come out the other side to whom?
You'll have identity providers and relying parties who want to use those identities. And in the middle is that broker who is anonymizing a lot of those transactions. And so I think the biggest challenge in rolling out the F6 will be the same thing Hizen faced, is understanding what happens in that black box so that citizens can trust that their information isn't mixed around, and that when they have a transaction with a commercial vendor, it's not sort of shared with a transaction on the federal side.
What's the reaction now that Hizen 3 is out there, is being used? Are people finding identity proofing, identity authentication much easier? And they're going, okay, it's not that big of a deal, or is there still some anxiety about it?
We went from severe angst to, oh, that really wasn't that big of a deal. I just did that for my credit reporting company, or I just asked that question in a transaction with my bank. So, well, that really wasn't that big of a deal. We no longer are getting that significant pushback. It's a onesie-twosie thing. What's amazing is that we had a whole community saying, I will never do that. My community will never do that. And yet the numbers as we migrated people never showed that. We consistently had about 90% go through the automated process. And so while the angst was there, we never realized that angst. And I think that we went right through to, oh, that's not that big of a deal.
It's interesting. It goes back to the whole idea of, you know, the culture change, the idea of communication. You guys have had a similar experience within DHS internally, because you also are in charge of the rollout of the PIV cards, but not just the cards, the actual use of the cards, the HSPD-12 for logical physical access. You made a comment that you hope to get to about 75% across the entire department by 2015. So give me a sense of your goals and what's happening there.
Actually, it's 2014. We've all committed to OMB that we would get to 75% of a logical access to the network using the PIV cards. We missed our 50% mark a little bit this year. We got to about 32% across the department as a whole. But I would say in our headquarters unit alone, we got to over 90%. And so it is doable. We ran through an understanding of all the technical difficulties in getting it at the headquarters level. The good news is that we got to 50% of people who could do it in the department by the end of the year. We just didn't have that last 18% turned on mandatory. So I think that there's the flywheel's moving on our understanding of how to get there, and 75% is a very achievable goal at this point.
What's the challenge with it? Is it just getting people, again, the culture change, getting people used to it? Or is there a funding issue? Is there a technology issue? Where do you see that kind of getting to that 50 and then eventually to that 75% goal?
It's certainly not a cultural issue with the federal employees. Everyone wants to make it easier. Less username and passwords. Less passwords I have to remember is something our users want. It's mostly the mix of applications that have their own authentication mechanisms now that have to be changed. And that does relate to resources and funding and the tight fiscal environment. Some of these are smaller applications, and some of them are very large applications. And so what we're after is understanding which ones can we do that have the propensity to move us forward on the goal with the largest numbers of people, and then do the smaller ones. It's the smaller ones, though, that will eventually take us from 90 to 100%.
In Bethesda, Maryland, Jason Miller, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.